Okay, thanks. So maybe I should first acknowledge my collaborators, some of you know pretty well. So most of the work I'll be talking about has been done with Bernd Ronecker. You know, just moved recently to St. Andrews in the UK, Scotland more exactly, and Daniel was involved, and some part was in Suas, Gangadharia was also involved. So it's Basel connections. I will make the introduction very short since you have heard about that already a huge number of times. So this will be about how to realize a new platform for Majorana fermions, Condensed Matter. So as the only thing I will need is that just make a few points. So take an ordinary fermions, just decompose in terms of Majorana fermions, and therefore in order to ensure these reality conditions. So Majorana fermions are their own antiparticles. So, and ideally, in condensed matter physics, they will emerge as collective excitations in solid states with unconventional superconducting pairing. One of the motivations to look for these Majorana fermions is because they obey non-Abelian statistics and offer a new platform for fault tolerant quantum computations. So when you decompose any fermionic destruction or creation operator in terms of these Majorana representations, well, we have not done much because any fermionic Hamiltonian can be recursed in terms of Majorana operators. But I mean, the whole point is that very few can support a solution with isolated protected Majorana fermions. So one of the achievements is where to find these isolated Majorana fermions. And as I said, I mean, a nice playground or platform is to have unconventional pairing, triplet-like superconducting. So why? Why triplet? I mean, if you consider standard S-wave, I mean, the point is, if you take your Bogoliubov quasi-particle, you have a spin up here and spin down here, and therefore it's difficult to realize these Majorana reality conditions because of the difference of spins here. However, with P-wave Bogoliubov quasi-particle, then imagine you have all the electrons that spin up, then you can easily realize such reality conditions. So Majorana fermion will be the zero energy states of such P-wave Bogoliubov quasi-particles, and therefore the whole antiparticles. Okay, the simplest realizations was this 1D P-wave superconductor, which was proposed by Kitaev 12 years ago. In which just decompose any electron operator in terms of two Majoranas. So I take these electrons at psi j, and you decompose into two Majoranas, gamma j1, gamma j2, and you assume some strong pairing between all these operators. This is these green bubbles here, which form the electrons, but you assume you have some strong pairing between the electrons. But if you go to strong enough pairing, then you may end up by pairing decomposing the electrons in such a way such that you are left with two edge excitations which are isolated Majoranas. So they are non-local, then they encode a very complex fermion which is robust to any local perturbation. So this is the simplest example, and people therefore have tried to see how to build such a realization for this simply oversimplified model. So there have been many proposals, some of which are not related, so I won't talk about them. So in the fractional quantumal effect, and people are still looking for this triplet-like ordering in triplet superconductors, though there are not so much candidates, I mean, these days. Also at the interface between topological insulator and superconductors. And today I will mainly focus on 1D-like quantum wires in proximity of S-wave superconductors, and the key ingredients will be spin orbit and Zeeman. Okay, let's focus on that. So this is the outline of my talk. There are two parts, which will be very quickly converting to one part. So, I mean, I will essentially talk about this first part as how to realize some 1D effective topological superconductors with RKKY systems. I may give a few words of a second part. Okay, so as I said, I mean, one of key ingredients is take a wire, fine, single channel to simplify the analysis, king spin orbit, Z-man. So what happens? I mean, in presence of spin orbit, you have you shift your both dispersion relations. So this is, for example, spin up. This is would be spin down, and the presence of the Z-man will open the gap in the right in the middle. And the key ingredient is you need a very strong gap. So you are looking for material with a strong large G factor. Fine. So what happens when you put such a wire in proximity of a superconductors? Well, a priori, you have two bands. You can diagonalize your dispersion relation. This is my minus band, my plus band, fine. And a priori, you can pair, you have three types of effective pairing. You can either pair you have two triplets pairing between the plus-plus bands and the minus-minus band, and a singlet pairing between the plus and minus band. And one of the keys is to be able to control this chemical potential and put it in just in the middle or inside the Z-man gap. That's why you need a very large Z-man gap, such that at low energy, you are left with only this triplet pairing between the minus-minus band. So you're left with single band with a single quantum number minus, and therefore, it realized this Kitaev-like problem. So this has been realized for 1D wires by So and Hall and Orega Hall. So, to summarize, you need these basic ingredients, so the rather strong spin orbit coupling, magnetic field, and the S-wave superconductors, and what you need essentially to be the Z-man gap to be larger than the proximity induced gap. Okay, and if you can realize such condition, you're in business, then you end up with two Majorana fermions at the end of the wires. Okay, so this has been proposed already 2-3 years ago, and one of the questions I would try to answer is, can we find some order equivalent realization of such a band structure? So the idea is as follows. You have these two bands due to spin orbit and Z-man, and the Z-man, let's say, is in the x directions, for example, and it's a constant. Let's do a gauge transform such that C psi sigma is changed into the exponential of e sigma kso. Essentially, what I'm doing is just a change of frame. So I'm going to, in this frame now, in the electron frame, if you want, this constant uniform Z-man field now becomes a spiral magnetic field, which I sketch here. And it's boost, so you can, essentially you put this branch here, this branch here, so you're left with this kind of electronic structure, which is equivalent. And so it means that rather than looking at spin orbit plus a constant uniform Z-man field, you may try to look at different structure, which would be some spiral magnetic field. So, and you can convince yourself, let's assume that I'm starting with such a real space spiral magnetic field. Is it really equivalent to my system? Well, so let's suppose I have some external periodic potential, which is the same, which is sketched here. What will happen? Actually, assume you start with your electrons, spin up, spin down, and they will clearly interact with such a magnetic field. And if the period of such of the spiral is commensurate with the with lambda f, then this spiral magnetic field will favor backscattering of electrons with a spin flip. And clearly, it's nothing but a bias transition, but in the spin sector, if you want. And it will open a gap. And one half of the degrees of freedom will be gap, the other half being conducting. Fine. So the Okay, these two things are definitely equivalent. So the main question is where to find such a real space spiral field. And it turns out that, well, we have been studying with Daniel Loss and Bernd Bronecker such a system in which we do have found such spiral field. This is about quantum wires when we took into account nuclear spins. More exactly, we are interested in wires in which there is a rather strong hyperfine interactions between the electron spins, degrees of freedom, and the nuclear spin degrees of freedom. So this is the basic Hamiltonian, quite simplified one. So this is my electronic degrees of freedom. They may include all what you want. I mean, electron-electron interactions, and disorders, you know, whatever you want. And I assume some kind of contact or hyperfine interactions in the lattice representation between the spin of the electrons at site I and the nuclear spins. So what we found for such a 1D system is that there is some kind of critical Curie-like temperatures, which are, let me call it G-stars, below which electrons and nuclear spins are tightly bound together into a new ordered phase in 1D. So how it works? I will summarize it briefly. The idea, okay, you have 2 degrees of freedom, but it turns out that one of the smallest energy scales is A, this hyperfine coupling. In other words, I mean, nuclear spins are very slow compared to electrons, so you can integrate out the electron degrees of freedom, fine. And what you are left with is that some effective, purely magnetic interaction between the nuclear spins. So let me explain. So I wrote it in Q space. This is nothing but the static electron spin susceptibility. A squared is the square root of my imperfect interactions. Well, to make it short, this is just the RKKY interactions. So nuclear spins are mainly interacting within each other due to RKKY interactions, therefore mediated by electrons. So what is the shape of this GQ, which is essentially this electron spin susceptibility in 1D? And you can see that GQ has a sharp minimum at 2kF. Well, this is not so surprising, because in 1D, I mean, electrons are known to be very sensitive to backscattering, and therefore at 2kF. And it means, if you look at the magnetic excitation of such a system in a finite size, you expect some spiral type ordering at finite Q at 2kF. Okay. But this is not the end of the whole story. And because you're not, you have to see. So what you have done so far is some kind of effective decoupling. You have integrated the electron degrees of freedom and treat this nuclear part, but you want to see what will be the effect of the nuclear spin Hamiltonian on the electrons. So you need some self-consistency. And so from the electronic point of view, what the electrons see, they see such a spiral ordering of the nuclear spins, for example. And it generates a spiral over the field, fine, and which is definitely at 2kF. And this is the fact that it's at 2kF was due to the fact that electrons are very susceptible at 2kF. And this is, again, my spiral external or magnetic field, if you want. And it will open a gap in the electronics system. So therefore, I mean, what we've done, you integrate the electrons, you found that they generate some kind of ordering for the nuclear spins, you feed that back, and you see that the electrons, it opens a gap in the electrons, and so on and so forth. So you need to have a full self-consistency calculations, fine. So this is a very stable, and the output of that is that these 2 degrees of freedom, so electrons and here by nuclear magnetic moments, are strongly tightly bound together. And below some Curie-like temperature, this star, So these two degrees of freedom are strongly dependent of each other.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Do you calculate finally the susceptibility in the cell-consistent model? Is this
what you? I calculate the electron spin susceptibility,
yes,
in a finite size system.
Sure, that's what you showed at the beginning. But what do you mean then by cell-consistent? How do you do this?
So at the beginning, let's say this is this is just interacting electrons in 1D.
Mm-hmm.
You found that you do have a minimum. But these assume that these are, they don't have any gaps there, just free electrons. But then what you found is that these nuclear over the field will gap your degrees of freedom. So what you have to recalculate is the spin in presence of a gap, for gap electrons,
mm-hmm,
and re-inject into nuclear spin and so on, until but it converges very quickly.
And you still have to take up.
Yes.
Even with the gaps.
Yes.
But,
why? No. The point is that, you are left with half of degrees of freedom, which are still at 2 keV. This is the one which are against the one who are gap are not.
After you do the
self-consistency. Yeah. Yeah. The 2.
Still have a period of exactly.
Yes.
Gap,
yes. It must be. It's the susceptibility is given by the electronic. The conduction, the metallic port. So it's at 2 keV.
No, but it's now gapped.
No, half of it. Half. This half. Half of it is gap, so we can integrate out. There's not, and the other half is the one which will still be at 2 keV.
Can I ask you, you have 1 degree of freedom, which is the direction of the plane of the head,
yes,
which is the degeneracy.
There is, yes.
Of your system, so you will have soft modes. So how do you include those in the analysis of what the TC is going to?
So typically, you assume that you have two choices for the helix, plus or minus. That's what you mean, I guess.
No.
The Goldstone. No, the finite size.
How finite?
Well, we can go. These wires are microns, and you can. So do you have some logs if you want? Or.
But if you have a finite system, then the key thing you have to know is what is, you still have fluctuations, right?
Yes, right.
And
but the Goldstone ones are cut, are infrared cut by finite size of the system. Otherwise, it's diverged.
If your phase transition is actually.
Well, call it phase-like, there is no genuine phase transition.
Well, it's your ground state is controlled by the edges, then. How do you handle commensurability between KF and the lengths of your system?
Well, you are comparing lambda F, a few hundred nanometer to, I'm not wondering about the age of the border.
You stabilize your system, eliminating the Goldstone mode by finite size. At the same time, if you will have incommensurability between KF and the system length, you will have to include the analysis of low energy Goldstones.
What you are wondering is about what would be the some kind of boundary effect at the edge. That's essentially what that comes up. You have microns. You have microns.
What's the combination of the boundary conditions and
typically, all this, what I can make sure is that for all the calculation we have done so far, up to very large length, the borders do not matter.
From what you said, it looks like in your calculations, you do not include the Goldstone.
No, we do, because the gold, this is what, if you look at the excitation around this minimum, you have the one, these are the Goldstone modes. Yes. But they are cut, essentially. By infrared cut. Because, essentially what we're looking at, you have some dispersion relation, you linear, and you look at the excitation, magnon excitation around such dispersion relations. these are your Megarstone modes. They are the ones.
But even in a finite length system, there is a degree of freedom, which is global spin rotation, right?
Yes, this one, I'm not. Here, I, for example, yes, I, here I assume some SU2 symmetric, but this electron spin susceptibility, actually, it's isotropic here. So it will, one plane of the helix will be chosen. And typically, which one? You need to add some, either to add some anisotropy in the electron spin susceptibility, or some external spin orbit, most probably that would. So Goldstone pool, no, Attic, I mean, these are the ones which are taken into account. And okay. And that's what I wanted to do. So this is independent of system size for realistic sample. By realistic samples, I mean, you don't want your result to depend on the length of your sample. And you should put numbers in realistic numbers for these hyperfine couplings, which is about 0.1 milli electron volt. And it turns out to be the case. And something which I did not mention is that actually electron-electron interactions helps you in the sense that it push up this T-star temperature. They're not writing these typical values of such T-stars, but let's say for strongly interacting system with a vertical parameter of the order of 0.6, we can push it in the range of a tenth of millikelvin, so between, let's say, 50 millik to 100 millik. But you need a rather strongly and clean interacting 1D system.
Sorry, sure. Keep you on the same circle. So as far as I understand, when on top of this T-star, there are virtual modes that contribute.
Yes.
And the comparison one should do is comparing the gap, which is the T-star,
yes,
with the level spacing between Goldstone modes if system is finite.
Yes.
And I guess that when you're saying that Goldstone modes don't matter, it means that T-star already must be smaller than the level spacing between Goldstone modes. Is it correct?
Yes, essentially, yes. Typically, which is equivalent to, yes.
If it's within the approximation, there is some kind of an upper limit for this star.
Yes. This is more or less equivalent to discuss such conditions.
Yeah. And getting back to numbers, so I think that maybe this is a way to estimate how high this star can go.
Given the length and.
Yeah.
But there are some other constraints.
They're more severe or less severe?
And typically, what matters also is the value of the hyperfine interactions, obviously, which enters.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah,
and this gives you some upper estimates.
What's the velocity that you estimate? What's the velocity of the Goldstone mode?
This is given by.
Again, just considering the numbers, to estimate for particle lengths. What would be the
I won't be able to give you a number.
But that's kind of important, right? To estimate the upper bound for the star.
I mean, typically this velocity would be given by this the bottom of the
you
band.
Guys did not estimate for this?
Maybe we did, but I forgot, to be honest.
Sorry, I missed the beginning, so maybe you asked this, you haven't answered. But I mean, what seems to be novel in this is the
fact that
you're using the 1D
of it.
I mean,
the 1D is crucial.
We're looking at the nuclear thing and the Mendeleev and found them. I mean, is the renormalization enough here that it really?
I mean,
this is more promising than looking at in a bulk system. I mean,
now 1D gives you this locking between electrons and nuclear spins.
Yeah, but even in high dimension. I mean,
no, you don't have to. The feedback doesn't. I mean, 1D provide you this 2K sensitivity, which you won't have in 2D or higher dimension.
You have a single mode for simplicity.
Yes.
So
But if you have more modes, well, actually, we, if you take, for example, into account carbon nanotubes, well, yes, you do have a similar type of scenario, but you have to pay attention. This order, you may find different ordering for the depending on the lithities of your mode. So you may have some kind of antiformatism between the elites, so some antiparallelism between the elites for carbon nanotube. If you have more modes, becomes a mess.
Critical temperature substantially higher, because if you take a three-dimensional system, this it's, should be the same thing. I think people looked at that.
They, yeah, but this
is much higher than that would be.
Well, there are many. You need.
Maybe it's not the only reason to look at it.
First, semiconducting means low density also compared to metal, and the value of the hyperfine interactions also, but 1D helps considerably. If you put numbers in 3D, you are in the macro Kelvin range, so 100 times smaller. So forget it. And
so the idea is basically you're using the better nesting to get a bigger order.
Yeah. Plus, together with the nesting or what I call locking. So the 1D is really crucial. It helps. It's different.
In 3D, you wouldn't get.
No, they won't. Yeah, that's why you don't have any feedback. I mean, when you generate the gap, what happens is, you stiffen these exponents. You make it even more sensitive, so it enhances. You make these things stiffer, more rigid, if you want, more sensitive.
Oh, so your minimum becomes deeper when you take into account
the way. And okay, so these are a bunch of consequences. If you open this gap below some, then you have a blocking of the 1/2 of the degrees of freedom. So you expect some reductions of your conductance by a factor 2. And the remaining, and what you are left with is that some helical, some low energy helical states. So the remaining channel are spin filtered. Actually, you can really prove by projecting to this low energy that you are left with a low energy helical state with spin filtering properties. Okay, there are a few, well, there are experiments running now in the group of Dominique Sumpel based on the old samples of Amir Jacobi, which he used 10 years ago to look at spin charge separations. They did see some, indeed, some reduction of the conductance by factor two, more or less. And however, well, this is still some indirect. There is no direct evidence of nuclear spins because they don't have access to nuclear spin information right now, though they are working on that. Okay, that's so. What happens when you put this in proximity of a superconductor? What you expect if you have some proximity in this gap into such wires? Then, what you could expect at low enough energy below this such a critical light temperature, you may expect some zero mode. Why? Because you have these helical states. And helical states plus some proximity induced gap, you are in business a priori to create some such Majorana HDs. But is it still, you have to ask one question is, is this scenario still valid in presence of a proximity induced gap? So in other words, how does superconductivity modify this wall locking scenario? Well, this you can easily answer these questions. I mean, an argument you can provide is that all that is based, these nuclear spins are interacting via Akakawa interactions. In other words, our superconductivity will alter the Akakawa interactions. If the superconducting current length is larger than the Fermi wavelength, and the distance between these nuclear spins, you expect not much difference. Only for when the nuclear spin real space separation is larger than superconducting current, you may expect some the Akakawa interaction to be cut. But otherwise, a priori, it should not be big modifications. So you can redo the same type of calculations. You can calculate the electron susceptibility in 1D in presence of the pairing term. And what you indeed see is that this sharp minimum is not modified. The width of it will be now given by the proximity news gap. So, I mean, actually you can even calculate for a non-interacting system this spin susceptibility exactly. And the main message is that this helical magnetic structure do survive in presence of the proximity induced gap.
Could you make some assumptions between the magnitude
of the gap and the effective magnetic field? Well, if the gap is very, very large, then you make this minimum very large, and then every excitation, then there is no current. So typically, it means, in other words, give you so for it to be, if it's too large, then it's flat, and forget it. What you want also, you want this to be topological, so you want this effective magnetic field, the strength, the amplitude of it, to be larger than the proximity induced gap. Otherwise, you are non-topological.
How did you come to the order parameters? I mean, the superconducting one versus the magnetic one. I don't know if some of the Lagrangian Hamiltonian does the same engine.
Yes. So if you without interactions, you have a Bogolyubov de Gennes Hamiltonian here, mm-hmm. and you can solve that exactly. Essentially, it's a textbook calculate the electron susceptibility for Bogolyubov de Gennes Hamiltonian. In presence of electron-electron interactions, you cannot do it exactly. You have to rely on bosonizations and low-energy approximations. But still, I mean, you can. Okay, so one of the messages is that this helical magnetic structure does indeed survive in this scenario, and you do expect some Majorana zero mode. So, what are the minimum ingredients? Therefore, here I have some magnetic moments which eventually can be played by nuclear spins, and I have this spiral ordering. And these magnetic moments interact via Kakao interactions, which may be. And I need a 1D electronic band, quasimodo. So we can take into account in the electronic degrees of freedom, the electron-electron interactions, which definitely help to here, in the sense that it enhances this T star. However, you pay a price, you reduce electron-electron interactions and reduce the proximity in this gap. So you need to make a compromise in there. Even if you go for very, very strong electron-electron interactions, you kill the proximity induced gap. So that's not what you want. So you have to make a compromise. And however, this wall locking scenario remains robust versus also point light non-magnetic disorder.
Pascal, I have kind of a stupid question. Is it possible to maybe also consider the Goldstone modes helping you by providing effective attraction between electrons, like phonons? To sort of enhance the proximity induced gap. Again, it's some kind of compromise because you don't want to have this Goldstone modes from the point of view of ordering, from the point of view of effective attraction between electrons. Maybe
you want them to
help you to increase the gap, but maybe that's.
I'm wondering whether I'm not double counting degrees of freedom. I mean, these Goldstone modes are creating, a consequence of the interaction between electrons and then. And you want still some feedback as a classical field and
some effective attraction
and some effective interactions.
So you're inducing gap by proximity, but if you have also some kind of glue, inside of the dot.
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
Why
but this
line,
is this is very recoupling. To give you numbers.
I said it's a stupid question. So.
I mean, you can actually look at how the electron spin susceptibility is modified. This is nothing. In terms of amplitude, 1%. So this could be fully negligible.
How could you be sure that the Majorana split and the ends? And in practice, do you calculate the wave function?
No. Here, I have a finite size. I have some helical. I can map. Essentially, what I'm saying is that this Hamiltonian at low energy is fully equivalent to the Taieb-like.
Okay.
For, fully equivalent. It's equivalent.
So I assume that if you calculate, you will find the peaks of wave functions at the ends. You're sure that that's it.
I'm in the topological sector. That's it.
But in Kitaev model, you have a localized states only for very specific parameters of the Kitaev model.
Yes.
Meaning that, for example, delta is equal to G and so on. So
yeah.
Otherwise, you might have some finite.
Yeah, but you do. And generally speaking, you do have some finite extension of this Majorana. Yes, you do. That's a generic case. You can calculate the Majorana function for the simple Kitaev problem. And you can also, even for interacting system, you can, well, there are things you can do.
But you still have your magnetic, your spin waves, which are also. Now, they are now something outside the BCS problem, with the general problem you used to find my runs. My question is whether their existence will change the conclusions about my runs, because those. And it's now becoming interacting through the vacuum in between. And
I'm not sure I understand what you mean. I mean,
well, you have the possibility to create a virtual spin wave which goes on one side to the other side, does something on the other side, comes back. This may open a gap and move the your energy state from the plane you have at the end to the finite energies and basically kill your symmetry.
Well, I think it comes back to the same question as Yaroslav. If
oh, no, it's a different question.
No, but
I have a paper about this with Milcher about the bosonic model.
Yes, no, but it is you want some kind of let's say here you want to use this bosonic mode as cavity mode essentially.
No, it's not the cavity.
No, but
it's in the same mode that. Participates in determining your
temperature. The question is how these Majorana bound states are coupled to this magnonic or bosonic mode.
So the bottom line, it's not going to open the gap.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to open. So it's bosonic mode, which, you know, as long as it doesn't change parity locally, it's bosonic mode, would not open again. So
yeah.
Well, we have a paper about that.
Well, we
consider the cavity microwave
mode, but it's a bosonic mode. Yeah, it's cavity-like or bosonic mode. Yeah, it does not change the parity.
Yeah, we're wondering about the same. So it turns out that unless you crank up a coupling to be extremely strong, then if the coupling was very strong, then it could completely renormalize the whole band structure. But at least in some perturbative sense,
which, and here clearly we are in a very weak coupling between such bosonic mode and so. I don't think it can modify such parity. Okay. So some other natural platform. So all what I told you requires the following recipe ingredients: magnetic moments, which are interacting via Akakawa interactions, some 1D electronic band, and S-wave superconductors. So there have been some recent proposal about putting magnetic atoms on top of a superconducting surface and assuming some pre-existing spin texture. So this is a very recent proposal, I mean, especially the later one by Yazdani, where they assume some helical structure between these atoms on top of a surface. So a priori,
helical structure, how does it come about? Is there pre-existing?
Well, Akakawa, you know, they put it by...
Still the same style of story.
Yeah, but they put it by hand, I mean, yes, essentially.
But due to Akakawa?
They mentioned, yeah.
But you could say put by hand. You also use Akakawa, right?
Yeah.
So it's the same, in the same spirit.
But here, I mean, these are words, I mean. They assume pre-existing, you know, they put that in their model, that's it.
So it's and not due to Akakawa, it's not so consistent. Well, yeah.
Let's say they assume that it can be due to Akakawa interaction, but you have to ensure that the self-consistent is all what.
So they want a substrate, on a two-dimensional substrate.
Yes. Now here it's 1D array essentially.
On a two-dimensional substrate. So it's a substrate that's mediating Akakawa interaction.
Yes, that's what I assume.
Difficult. Maybe some fine-tuning of okay, it's not too
much. Actually, I mean, well, such any construction has been observed in some magnetic, I mean, in some surface.
But that's not due to...
Due to, I don't know. It's demands quite, I mean, for them, for me, it's pre-existing. I mean, you have to ensure the consistency. That's all what we have done so far.
But did they try like a magnetic tip to see that it's existing?
Yeah, I mean, typically what people in the group of Wiesendanger in Hamburg, they've observed, and not with, I mean, they've observed domain walls with helical structures.
And they say this is DM.
Hmm?
Oh
yeah, spin orbit. In that, for the Hamburg experiment, this is a spin orbit.
So I know this experiment. So, if there would be no one, there's only one publication, PRL.
Yes.
11, I think it's Hamburg group.
Yes.
It was discussed last week. Those experimenters also from IBM that know this paper from the same group. So if there would be no DM interaction, there would be just RKKY. And then you know that, and then the period would be matched to the half Fermi wavelengths of electrons on the surface of the superconductor. And they had, I think, niobium, this superconductor, okay, some relatively wide gap material. So now the period, the observations, they didn't observe a period, but they observed some modulation of contrast, and this period of the modulation is not entirely consistent with the lambda f, and to model it, they indeed take into account dm, it's true, which in the at least their calculation showed that the period changes, so you still have modulation, but the period is not exactly lambda f over two, so that's the thing. But one important thing is, in any case, lambda f is much shorter than psi. And in your first story, as far as I understand, the f was much longer than the psi. Is it right that in your first story about
it's RKKY, so I need psi f much longer than the distance between impurities. That's
so once again, I have some questions. Fermi wavelengths, is it small or large compared to coherence lengths in the underlying superconductor in your previous story? Lambda f in the wire versus psi in a superconductor.
It's lambda f is smaller than psi.
Smaller than psi. Yes. Then,
but larger than the distance between the impurities.
But larger than the distance between the impurities.
So impurities are nearby.
Impurities are just coarse grain, right?
Yes, coarse grain.
Okay, so you have a dense system of impurities much less than psi and lambda f. And when you're saying that the pairing is local, basically when you refer to Pitaev model, Pitaev model is actually a local pairing. It's
yes,
nearest neighbors. So in your case, in which sense it's local then, or it's not local?
No, it's local. We did. I mean, we consider a local one. But
what local means then? What does it mean?
Yeah.
Just as a.
Yes. Local means local. I mean,
you had it in momentum representation, but if you would write it in the coordinate representation,
then it would be just S
wave. Yeah, S wave, contact, I mean that.
So, if I don't understand, you're saying that it's contact interrupt. You're saying that your induced superconductivity, as far as I understand, local means psi dagger of R, psi dagger of R.
Yes.
At the same time, psi is large compared to lambda f. So what does that mean? So psi dagger is the same point in BCS model. I don't understand what it means, but the coefficient there is just the potential of interaction. Now you have induced superconductivity. Maybe you can do the same thing, but I just wonder why. Right, because now you have induced superconductivity, so your psi dagger is coupled to delta in the conductor, and this delta, well, it's not delta actually, it's f function, right? So it has r prime, and it decays at the scale of order of psi.
Yeah, that's actually a good question. I think that's kind of constrained to all of this type of proximity type of theories.
Yeah, I don't think it does anything bad, but
yeah,
maybe it's harmless.
I don't know, to be honest.
I don't think anything will break in your
no.
Theory, but it's just right. It's not local.
yeah, I know. I understand what you mean.
Xi will have to be less than lambda for it to be effectively local.
Yeah, that was what I asked.
So, yeah, but it's other way around. But it may change. There will go to some prefactor, some algebraic prefactor that you get at the end of the day. Lambda for Xi, something like that, something to some power. Maybe it's going to be bad. Okay,
no, I will. So yeah, the 1D band. So referred to the talk by Leonid last week. So this 1D band is nothing but the Shiba band, and for chain of magnetic impurities, I mean some Leonid and Felix and Falkopienka have derived sort of an effective tight binding Kitaev-Flach Hamiltonian for such a system. So what about experimental predictions? So elliptic magnetic phase is a ground state. I mean, there is this locking scenario. So you have a self-sustained elliptical phase. If you put numbers, so I would start with semiconducting wires with nuclear spins, so gallium arsenic, for example. If you try to put numbers, you find that this G stars is negligible, less than mini-Kelvin, so you can forget it. With a proximity induced gap of the order 0.2 millievolt. For the indium arsenic wire, I mean, actually the gap, proximity gap is about the same. You have a slightly larger hyperfine coupling, but what you gain is you gain a factor 3 squared in the magnetic moments of the nuclear spins. So, and if you switch on some reasonable interactions, you can gain a factor 40 typically. So you are in between 24 around 40 millik.
Do you take into account the two-star isotropic field for such large spin rate?
Sorry.
Well, there is quadrupole moment in the in indium nuclei, and that's.
No, it's did not take that into account that much. He has just the hyperfan direct contact interaction between electron spins and the. And then, the quadrupolar interactions you're mentioning, I'm not sure it will affect much my my ordering all my scenario. I mean.
No, this is an isotropic field.
Yeah, that I know what
you.
But anisotropy, which what we do, mainly will favor some specific direction for the plane of my helix. My electron spin susceptibility becomes anisotropic, so I have some key perp, some key z, and I can redo all my these calculations. I mean, and then you favor some specific plane for the helix. That's this is something we have studied pretty deep.
Also, dipolar interactions in principle.
Dipolar interaction.
But that's probably extremely tiny energy.
It's tiny. This one you can forget. It's orders and orders of magnitude.
But the polar more important than
that one. Here it's mentioning about some anisotropic. I think it's small. But it won't change the whole scenario. It will just help to. I mean, I think what will help is some for such system, if you have some spin orbit direction, we'll go over and over this. So this is the most relevant maybe interactions. ENS wires, may be observable. Go to low enough temperature, and you must be rather clean. And last is magnetic cobalt atoms on a niobium surface. Take with such distance of the order of 3 angstroms, or the order of 3 angstroms, let's say. So, in order to enter this topological phase, you need this effective magnetic field spiral to be larger than delta S. So it provides a constraint on the value of my hyperfan coupling, which is about 0.5 millielectron volt. Well, I don't know whether such interactions between magnetic atoms and electrons is maybe reasonable. But it means that really you need a very good coupling between the magnetic moments of the, your magnetic atoms and your superconducting surface. Another strategy would be to really embed your magnetic atoms inside the surface to enhance such magnetic couplings. Because if you put them on top, I'm afraid that this is not so sure that you can. It's really an issue of material and surface preparation, which I'm not expert on. Wait. Let me finish. This is a new platform from Majorana Fernandes, you know, using Akagawa systems. So we try to convince you that this wire with nuclear spin may be one opportunity, despite you need to go to rather low temperatures. And these magnetic atoms on superconducting surface also, which are more promising because they are easy to create and you can easily manufacture or such chains of magnetic atoms. So the advantage is this self-locking scenario, no fine tuning, get it for free. Thanks.
Coming back to the question on zero third splitting, I mean, for the nuclei, I guess, I don't know what will give you a zero third splitting, but for the cobalt atoms, I mean, in principle, you should have some zero third splitting and you'll get more like some Ising type or something interaction.
Yes. It does select some specific directions for the plane of the helix. That's what.
Close to that, I mean, just close to helix. It's not the thing. The problem is not whether you choose a direction.
Yeah.
It's whether you have a helix with a constant turn angle. Yeah. If you don't have a constant turn angle, then it completely destroys this coupling and this sort of spill filtering thing. So I think that's the thing you should be worrying about.
Assume you have some strong anisotropy, then you have a phase transition.
If it's incommensurate, it doesn't just go with the same turn angle. And it doesn't go to the turn angle, you can't do this transformation to get rid of the sort of the helical pile on some of the freedom. So then it can.
Yeah, but
the other spectrum. So it has much more dramatic effects.
No. So to answer your question, assume you have some stern angle, some umbrella-like, for example.
No, it's more than that. It's not a constant turn angle. I mean, it tends to hang around in these directions, and so you get a sort of Sine-Gordon model.
Yeah, but this is an anxiety state. I mean, although this wall-looking scenario, it's the ground state. I mean, this costs you energy to do,
that. The ground state, you don't have strictly periodic system. It's more like quasi-periodic because you have two incommensurate periods superposed on each other in magnetic structure. So if one doesn't principle X-ray of the system or neutrons, you won't see a singular reflexivity, some tail staircase or something. That's a thing you see.
Yeah, because then you get it in principle, you don't get one spin polarization which goes through it, it's not there. You get in principle actually, and you get a Cantor set in the spectrum, you get infinite number of little gaps and stuff like that. So I think that's really the issue about putting in anisotropy, I don't think.
Comments?